Welcome to the Sex Talk Cafe, a podcast where you'll get to learn from the experts in the field of sex, love, and relationships. The mission of the Sex Talk Cafe is to normalize the conversation on sexuality while building a bridge between the sexual and spiritual. I'm your host, Susan Morgan Taylor. I'm a holistic sex therapist, intuitive coach, and specialist in women's sexuality and feminine spirituality. I'm the founder and CEO of the Pathway to Pleasure Collective, where I help women and couples around the world restore intimacy, save their relationship, and get back to love without feeling like they have to sacrifice themselves just to keep their partner happy. Thank you so much for joining me. Welcome to the Sex Talk Cafe. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Sex Talk Cafe. I have a really fabulous guest today. We have Astrius Amori, who is an integrative medicine healer whose 30-plus experience of practice and expertise spans various healing modalities. With a deep reverence for the interconnectedness of mind, body, and spirit, he seamlessly integrates shamanism, natural plant-based therapies, energy medicine, and sound healing into his practice. By harmoniously blending these ancient wisdom traditions with modern medical approaches, Astrius Amori offers a holistic and transformative healing experience. Astrius is also the author of this fabulous book called Psychedelic Sacred Sexuality, and you can see here we have the image of that up on the screen. We're going to be talking about all kinds of really cool stuff having to do with psychedelic sacred sexuality, and also the intersection of medicine, mental health, healing with these plant medicines. So I'm so excited to have you here on Sex Talk Cafe today, Astrius. Welcome to the Sex Talk Cafe.
Thank you, Susan. It's awesome to be here.
Yeah. Well, just in your own words, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about your work, how you came into this line of work, and maybe a little bit about your book. And then I've got, like I said, a whole list of stuff we're going to dive into that I'm really looking forward to.
Yeah, sure. I began my career as a family physician, and still I'm a family doc, but I became more interested in complementary, integrative, and functional medicine therapies early on in my career. Decided to dive into learning more about natural therapies, and with that, I also dove into shamanism, traveled to Peru, traveled to other exotic locations, and found the magic in plant medicines like ayahuasca. I branched way beyond that, of course, and have worked with many other plant medicine molecules as well as synthetics, and I found them to be hugely helpful for myself in terms of transforming myself spiritually, also healing any issues that I may have needed to clear, and then also in providing information to my patients in terms of the safe use of things like microdosing mushrooms to help treat depression and anxiety, and, you know, pointing them to facilitators or retreat facilities where they may be able to do that deeper work. I found that as an allopathic family doc, that the SSRIs, SNRIs, all the different types of psychotropic medications really weren't working very well, and we now know that most antidepressants are no better than placebo, so about a 30% efficacy. And we've subsequently found that many of the psychedelics have a much higher efficacy in treating depression and oftentimes other deeper underlying issues, which can be treated as people go into these deeper spiritual states. So, my road has been one of kind of weaving together natural medicine with allopathic medicine, while at the same time dipping my foot in the pool of psychedelic medicine for a good 20 years, and then finding ways here in the state of Colorado, which is more permissive of things like mushrooms, to allow my patients and others to experience it in a safe set and setting, consented type of setting, of course, and to explore ways of opening themselves more deeply to oneness and connecting more deeply to their lovers, and then connecting more deeply to just a space of love, which is so needed on this planet.
Oh, I just love that. And I think it is really, you know, as a someone who comes from mental health, I can't agree with you more regarding the the psychotropic medications that are used for things like anxiety and depression, that they just, right, they're not as effective as they've been made out to be, not to mention the side effects that come with the sexual side effects in particular, which really can be devastating. And so I love that you really are kind of like a bridge between these two worlds, and that you're able to weave in some of these more holistic approaches and starting to really bring in the psychedelics, which I really believe is the future of medicine, definitely the future of mental health, because like you said, I think there's enough research out there at this point now showing how effective these substances can be, these molecules, these natural molecules for the most part. I know it's not all of them necessarily are existing in nature, but for the most part, what the natural world can give us through something like, say, psilocybin and magic mushrooms, that really can take us to real healing. I think so many issues when we're dealing with mental health, even physical health issues, are really issues of the mind, issues of the spirit, issues of the soul that are over time made manifest through physical ailments or mental health problems. So I really love this work that you're doing and being the bridge between the traditional medical world and then kind of bridging in some of these, what we would consider in our culture kind of fringe, although I believe it's really the future of medicine. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree that it's the future, but it was also our past. If we go way back to the Asclepion, the beautiful healing temple that Hippocrates worked at, he would have his clients or his patients arrive the night before. They would drink an elixir of some sort, maybe it was something like ayahuasca, and then the next morning he would ask them what came to them in their dreams. And by allowing them to go into the psychedelic dream state, he was able to, understand the underlying mind-body relationship that was likely contributing to many of these issues. Of course, some of them were obviously, an abscess that needed to be drained or a broken bone, but the other 90% were oftentimes more somatic issues related to the mind. So we're returning back to this powerful modality of medicine, and many are calling it a psychedelic renaissance, which I agree. And I just hope that we engage in the psychedelic renaissance in a responsible way, to where it's not shut down by the more conservative folks that are out there kind of monitoring where this is going. So I think if we're smart and we do this in a more mindful, cautious manner, and look at it from an opportunity for healing rather than just tripping,
Sure.
then we're absolutely going to move the puck in the right direction.
Yeah, and I agree with that. And I think the challenge is, and I know that you write about this in your book, which we're going to get into in a minute, but there is this danger of this falling into the control of medical, meaning that you're going to have to be like a licensed mental health therapist in order to administer these things, or a licensed MD, or that there's going to be so much regulation on the ability to use these types of substances that it's going to become cost prohibitive and kind of locked down and really relegated only to medical professionals. What's your take on that?
That's a big fear of mine. And being a physician, you would think I would be for the medicalization, right? But I've seen what happened in Oregon in terms of the cost for a physician to be able to do psilocybin therapy, which is somewhere in the range of $30,000 for just permitting or certifications to do it. Then you're very regulated in terms of who you order it from. You have to have two facilitators there. It's cost prohibitive and not affordable for patients or the provider. So I think the best way forward is two paths. One, which is kind of the underground traditional path with facilitators and shamans that are out there willing to work with people in retreat centers, both in the United States as well as in other countries. And then, a limited amount of medical access, which hopefully can become more affordable by having scholarships or the states just making it, less cost prohibitive. That way, if you have somebody that's more conservative, they don't feel comfortable about going out into the woods on a mountaintop with a group of young people. Maybe they're like 60 or 70 and they still want to do mushrooms because they've got a cancer diagnosis, or they just want enlightenment. They may not feel comfortable doing it in that unstructured or less structured environment. And if myself or other docs could at least offer a very controlled setting for their first couple, then they could go out and work in the group setting. So I want it to be available for everybody. And I think having the settings that are varied for each individual offers more opportunity, but I don't want to shut down the, underground facilitation. And I think there's some need for some training of some of these individuals so they know about drug interactions, they know how to handle bad trips, things of that sort, but they don't need to be charging them $30,000 a year to do it and over-regulating them. Yeah, that's going to be moving it in the wrong direction.
I totally agree. Yeah. Well, let's dive into the book. Oh my God, Psychedelic Sacred Sexuality. I'm showing the book cover on the screen here on my side, and you've got it on your side there as well. It's really beautiful. And I want to just dive into, the book, some of the content in the book. What inspired you to write this book, and specifically on sacred sexuality and psychedelics?
Yeah, thanks, Susan. I would say I was experiencing so many beautiful levels of love and oneness and bliss and with my partner. And oftentimes when I would have just an amazing evening or whole night with my lover, I would lay there with her and I would say, oh my God, I just want everybody to experience this. Nobody should be on this planet and not travel to the places that we do. And I feel so blessed to have the ability to work with psychedelics on my own, to be able to travel and experience these psychedelics. And how can other people to travel to these states of bliss and oneness with their lover? And how can I help people be in a state of deeper love for themselves, for others, and for the world around them? I often find myself in this beautiful state of just my heart exploding in light and love when I'm really deep in the medicine, and especially when I'm holding my partner. And I think we could shift the planet and the whole dynamic of, how we work together to solve conflict, how we work together to solve climate change and the horrible things that are happening in the Middle East, instead of this whole aggressive masculine element of control and greed, which exists in so many different levels, whether we're talking corporate society or the war machine or the control of territories between countries, et cetera. There needs to be a return to love, respect, oneness and collaboration, and away from division and competition and greed. So I think psychedelics offer an opportunity for that. And so, yeah, a big motive of it was, on the deeper level, philosophically and deep from my heart, how can I shift this crazy fucking world to a place of love? And, to my readers, I apologize for not having my picture on the screen, because this is such a taboo topic and because I'm still practicing medicine, I'm vulnerable to these assholes that are out there that want to take down people that are trying to spread messages such as this. They're out there just to kind of hunt and find and shoot to kill kind of these progressive thinkers. So once I let go of my medical practice in the next 3 to 5 years and I'm just writing alone, I'll definitely make myself more visible and be afraid of it. But, that's it in a nutshell, just wanting people to experience love. And it took me 3 years of contemplating this book to have the cojones to say, you know what, I'm going to write this book no matter what. And I know I'm going to get backlash from various people in regards to whatever. And, it's better for me to get this out there and to shift 3 or 4 people into a place of love than to worry about the repercussions. So So there it is.
Thank you. Thank you for your bravery and writing the book and being here, and understandable why we have to be a little bit incognito for that purpose. And I look forward to the day where that's not the case. But that's how it is. In your book, you share a lot of your personal stories of you and your partner on sort of different molecules, and sort of having these experiences where you are, going on the journey together, and then you're also having the interaction of lovemaking while you're on the substances, which I think is really beautiful. And I want to ask you a question about that, because I've always had this rule of like, don't combine the drugs with the sex, because what if the sex then, when you're not using the substance, is it diminished in any way? Like you're having these really high, amazing experiences while you're on the psychedelics, these really powerful, beautiful energy, love, connecting with the universe. Does it at all diminish having sexual relations when you're not using the substances?
I think it enhances everything, but the importance of it is that the couples always consent before they decide to partake in a particular psychedelic, and they understand that it may make them wilder in one way or another. And then if there's, an area of exploration that goes beyond where she or he may want to go, then, they need to either have a sign that they raise, that says, okay, I don't want to go there, so that there's no element of non-consenting progression in the sexual activity. But I would say the benefit of psychedelics is it helps take our default mode network offline, which, we have many people that have spoken about that, Michael Pollan and How to Change Your Mind, he discusses the default mode network quite a bit. And it's basically, it takes off this monkey mind that's always thinking about, oh, what do I need to do tomorrow? And what am I, forgot to pay this bill? And you're more present for your lover, and you're able to feel them more sincerely from their heart. You're more authentic yourself. And then you're in the space of timelessness and deeper love that allows you to just be in flow and be in this ecstatic state. And sometimes it's not lovemaking. Sometimes it's just holding each other in a yab-yum position. Sometimes it's doing tantric massage. And then you find that the psychedelics improve the sensitivity to touch, to smell, to taste. All your sensory perceptions are double, if not 10x enhanced. So it just makes it that much more juicier in terms of the experience.
What would you say to someone listening to this, perhaps, who might say, well, that I'm just being devil's advocate here, to try to consider, what's the other perspective?
Totally.
Like someone that might say, like, well, that's, just a shortcut, and you should be able to access those states without the quote unquote drugs, not seeing it as, we'll talk about the medicine piece, these substances really is medicine, or I believe they're like really a bridge for us to taste these other realms. But what would you say to someone like that, that just said, oh, like, why are you using that stuff? You should be able to do it, quote unquote, naturally or on your own or without the aid of these psychedelics?
I would say, yeah, you can get there to a certain degree with holotropic breath work and Kundalini breath work, and, even with tantric practice. But this will amplify it so many more times in terms of the levels or quantum leaps that you can make compared to not having a psychedelic on board. And if you listen to people, psychedelic experts like good old Terrence McKenna, they'll tell you that one LSD trip was the equivalent of a year of meditation, right? Many will say the same thing for mushrooms. And I think most psychonauts like myself have done tons of mindful-based work. I've done silent retreats, I've done breath work, I've done all of that stuff, of course. And I've experimented with, other modalities of healing, acupuncture, energy work, Reiki, past life regressions, et cetera, et cetera. But the cool thing about psychedelics is it allows you to go more inward and to appreciate what's going on in your body, and then also to go outward and to appreciate what's going on in your lover's body. So sometimes I can even see the chakras of my lover and be able to say, oh my God, I see something stuck here. I'm going to spend some energy in your heart chakra, or let's do this yoga pose and I'm going to sit on your root chakra and then just run my hands down your back and move energy from root up towards crown. So it gives you this like extrasensory perception of being able to move energy, which you would never ever get in a normal conscious state, unless you were doing like holotropic breath work, which would be difficult to be doing breath work while you're doing tantric massage, right?
Or using altered states of consciousness to perceive energy. But I could see how what's coming to my mind as you're describing this is that it's a vehicle. It's a way to kind of get access to these states of awareness, of consciousness, of deepening love, connection, a little bit faster than how it might happen through breath work or tantric practice. And what's wrong with that? I mean, it would be like saying, well, you know, stop driving automobiles. We should go back to horse and buggies or bicycles, right? Like we use shortcuts all the freaking time to help us get from point A to point B. Or, you know, don't use reading glasses. Well, why not? It's just an aid to help you be able to read better. And I think the psychedelics, it sounds like, are really a similar kind of thing. It's a bridge. It's a way to a vehicle, a way to an entry point into some of these other aspects of our consciousness and of our being that we may or may not be able to access otherwise. Maybe there's other pathways that would take 10 times longer and require a lot more effort. You know, why not have something that is more of a doorway in, a little bit more of a shortcut?
Yeah, that's a great example. It's kind of like using Google Maps versus a paper map, right?
Google Maps. Who knows what a paper map looks like anymore? You know, like my kids have no idea what the world was like when we didn't have Google Maps. They can't even tell.
Right. So now you got this high bandwidth app on your phone that navigates you around roadblocks and slow traffic and takes you to where you need to go much more rapidly versus you're stuck in traffic and you're getting lost and hitting all these different slowdowns along the way. So it's up to, you know, the individual to decide, okay, are psychedelics for me and my lover, or is that, you know, pushing the envelope too hard? And I make a big point in the book that before lovers should engage in psychedelic medicine together, they should at least have 6 months of experience doing it on their own. Okay. And then if they have traumas that are being worked through on psychedelics, they definitely need to work with a therapist definitely a trained trauma therapist. Mm-hmm. Because if they come into a psychedelic space and they're having this release of a past traumatic experience while they're tripping out with their partner, it can be a really difficult situation. So I think doing that preparation, clearing stuff, being in a state of readiness and being in a state of knowing what they're going to experience with a particular molecule is important. Otherwise, they can flail and have some bad trips.
Yeah. And I think your book is a little bit of a guide map for that, because you're sharing your personal experiences while you're on each of these different substances with your lover. And so there is a bit of a roadmap, it seems like.
Yeah. And then I have, you know, pharmacologist Ben, who I consulted with, who's a psychedelic pharmacologist, who help me make these tables that will say, okay, you don't want to be taking Prozac while you're doing MDMA. You don't want to combine these two plants together so you don't end up with these horrible side effects of serotonin syndrome, you know, et cetera. Lots of good, yellow flags, red flags, yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was really another thing I really liked about the book was that part of it. And I was going to ask you about that, of how you you come up with those things, like sort of the potential negative side effects and also potential contraindications. So if you're on XYZ medications or don't mix this plant with that plant, I thought that was really fascinating and really useful. And so you said you worked with a pharmacologist to assist with that part of the book.
Yeah. And I had him review the whole book, make sure that I was totally on target in terms of my commentary. And then we discussed, you know, different conditions that are contraindicated for psychedelic medicine, such as bipolar, schizophrenia, other delusional type conditions, because we don't want to send those people out on a loop of disorientation. So,
sure. And that calls to mind. I actually know I have a personal friend who did a lot of psychedelics in his early years, and then used, I'm not sure what it was. It might have been like that frog medicine or ayahuasca, some psychedelic
Campo.
with. Yeah, but actually yeah, he didn't do well. It sent him sort of into like a, after everything was over, after the trip was over, he was not in a balanced mental state. And I'm wondering if you could speak to that a little bit. Are there, just history, like health history contraindications? Like if someone has had a history of, I don't know, mental illness, but they're not currently mentally ill, or they've had bad trips in the past, should they stay away from psychedelics in the future? Like, I don't know. What's your take on that?
Yeah, great question. I would say the general contraindications are a history of bipolar
Okay.
and schizophrenia. Or, if they've had a history of just a crazy, disorienting kind of journey with psilocybin and some of the more lower-end psychedelics, they definitely want to stay clear. However, if they've had one bad trip, they don't have those particular psychiatric conditions, they could do a facilitated journey of low dose with somebody who's going to be there holding space for them so that they do have a difficult time. They're not just on their own tripping and going into these paranoid states. So I think it's always good to have a trusted, experienced facilitator who can be there to hold space, to move energy, whether it's just putting their hand on your heart or holding your feet to ground out. To have them choose the music to help you ground. And then that way you've created that safe set and setting so that if things do get a little wonky, somebody's able to keep you even keeled and you're not capsizing the boat, right?
Yeah, and let's talk about these terms because I know some of our listeners are not going to be familiar with the term set and setting, which is used all the time in psychedelic medical work. And could you just talk about what does those terms mean and why is it important with psychedelic work?
And Michael Pollan again talks a lot about that in his How to Change Your Mind book. But basically, the set is kind of your mindset when you come in there. Like, okay, how am I feeling today? Am I really jaded from a bad day at work? Am I having an issue with my girlfriend? Things of that sort. Or do I feel grounded, balanced, and ready to proceed into the deep universe of psychedelic medicine. And you definitely want to be in that more grounded place. I think sometimes I'll arrive at ceremonies, with groups of people and it's been a crazy day and I do have to sit there and kind of meditate, do a little breath work. And we'll oftentimes do that before we begin a ceremony as we set intentions. But finding that grounded state is important in terms of the set. And then the setting is the environment for the most part. So are you doing it at your home? Are you doing it in nature? Are you doing it at a retreat center? Do you feel safe with the facilitators that are around you and the participants? And have you set up some guardrails with your partner in terms of how far you want to go sexually or tantrically, et cetera. So that's all part of the setting. And then once you've kind of established that, then I think you're ready to explore and being aware that yeah, there can always be some issues where you may feel some anxiety, you may feel some irritability, and then having some options like, okay, I'm going to take some magnesium to calm my nerves, or maybe a little CBD if I can't sleep towards the end of this journey. So there's little things like that that you want to have set up. And then the other really cool thing that I talk about in the book is cool things that you can have in your bedroom. So it could be aromatherapy, the candles. Of course, the music is super important. It needs to be a very meditative, happy kind of music, not a dark, punk rock or
Okay,
definitely don't
no.
want any rap music, right? So it needs to be enlightening and mindful. So I listen to a lot of mantra music. I listen to artists like Yaima, Purangi, Desert Dwellers. Folks, Sting is actually really good for those people like
They've got
him.
some beautiful
And
songs.
then you may want to have like massage oil out. You may want to have some snacks. It could be fruit so that if you're feeling a little low on glucose, you can have a strawberry, which will, by the way, taste 10 times better, as mentioned, on psychedelics. And then, you know, even some toys, if you enjoy sex toys while you're in the modality of foreplay and whatnot. So I think you can really spend some time setting that up with your lover before you even take your mushrooms, etc.
I love that. Well, yeah, and let's talk about orgasm on psychedelics. Mm-hmm. There's lots of that in
now
your
we're
book.
Getting deep.
We can't have
we should have started off with that, right?
All right.
Start off with a bang.
You gotta talk about orgasm at least once.
Yeah.
I notice in your book a lot of there. It seems like there's sort of this like being right on the edge of it, like and there's this real intensity. And just to talk to me about it, what's been your experience and what's available, what's possible that maybe isn't necessarily possible without the psychedelics?
Yeah, so this is where I've really done a lot of R&D, and I talk about that quite a bit in the book. But if we think about how psilocybin works, for example, it works via, you know, the 5-HT2A receptor serotonin, and just like Prozac and Paxil can make it more difficult for a guy to achieve orgasm, so can LSD and mushrooms slow your orgasmic potential. So can MDMA. Many of these will slow your ability to release and have that orgasmic response. Now, is that a horrible thing? Not really, because it makes you want to enjoy your lover for a longer period of time, whether it's tantric massage or having that intercourse. The challenge is, yeah, you can be on edge of an orgasm, and it can actually feel like you're on an orgasm for what seems like hours sometimes. And it can be so crazy, crazy intense that once you do release, that orgasm is manyfold what you would ever experience in a normal conscious state. So I've had some releases where I, you know, scream so loudly. I've got a condo here in town, and then I've got a mountain house. And I'm like, oh my God, my neighbors are probably going to like call the management, you know, wondering what happened to Fred Estrellas. And anyway, it can be a challenging but good situation. And by that happening, you're like, oh my God, this is so much better than what I've experienced in the normal state. And the same goes for women. They can have more intense orgasms. And I found that particularly with LSD, that the orgasmic potential is increased. So you may have, for guys, 5 or 6 orgasms. And for gals, it could be even more than that. And it almost seems nonstop. So it will initially kind of slow the process, but then it's kind of rapid fire after that. So very, very powerful there in terms of the release. MDMA is one that can sometimes make it difficult for guys to have erections because it can create this sympathetic nervous system overdrive, which is like what guys will get when they have performance anxiety. So it kind of shuts them down because their nerves are just too wired, right? But once that lessens after a couple hours of being in the MDMA, normally guys are able to be very functional. And some guys, it doesn't affect them at all. But then what I found is that it can even be more difficult to orgasm on MDMA. So for myself, sometimes I'll have my lover massaged my prostate, my G-spot, and that is, you know, like oral sex with G-spot massage. That can be the most earth-shattering orgasm a guy can experience, is MDMA with that kind of sexual activity. And then the same thing can be true for the gal, hitting those two incredibly sensitive areas as well.
Yeah. I love it. So there's really this idea of, you know, like these doorways opening, the access into these other realms of deeper love, connection, the capacity to feel more, to experience more, to access cosmic states of consciousness and connection, feeling into your own pleasure, but also your lover's body and pleasure and energy. I love all that. And here's a question I have for you. That's all amazing. However, what about keeping our brain chemicals balanced? If we're beginning to experiment, as you have, you know, quite regularly with some of these molecules, there can be, I'm sure, with some of them, such as MDMA, even a certain risk, maybe all of them, but I know with MDMA, a certain risk of sort of getting a serotonin imbalance to the extent where it could almost lead to things like depression. If you're overusing these molecules, or you're not supplementing properly after using them. And I wonder if you could just speak to that. Like, how do we stay balanced and healthy while exploring?
Yeah. Thanks for bringing that up, Susan. MDMA is the most well-recognized problem child in terms of causing a post-journey fatigue and sometimes depression, irritability. And I talk a lot about it in the book on how we can do things such as 5-HTP, 5-hydroxytryptophan, which supports serotonin rebuilding, magnesium, some of the grape seed extracts, N-acetylcysteine, glutathione, NAD, et cetera, can help you reboot and be fine. I think the importance of MDMA in my clinical/psychedelic opinion is to try to limit it to once a month and not to go too big. So I would say don't go beyond 200 milligrams if possible. And then obviously do it on a day where you're not going to work the next day. And give yourself time to just relax and rebuild your neurotransmitters before you go back into the work week. Yeah. I think the other ones don't significantly impact the neurotransmitters in a way that it's a big concern, but you still have to be aware. And for some, a little 5-HTP can be helpful there. And a lot of it, too, is integration. So after you've had an amazing cosmic journey with your lover, you want to talk the next morning, the next day, the next week, the next month about what came in for them. Was it good? Was it bad? What can we do better next time? And then, you know, be able to sort out any issues that may have arisen from it. So integration is a key part of any ceremony. Yeah.
Thank you for that. And I think the other question that comes to mind is sourcing the substances, because, you know, it depends, at least in the United States of America, it does depend on which state you live in, because the laws are different from state to state. You have varying levels of accessibility with some of these substances, and some of them really not at all. So they're being obtained through potentially questionable sources. Like, how does one go about safely sourcing and or vetting a source? And I don't know, this might be outside the scope, but if you're willing to speak to that, because I'm sure, you know, people listening to this might be thinking that, how do we safely and responsibly source these substances?
Yeah, no, another great question. I feel that for psilocybin, for example, it's best to grow your own or to have a friend that grows it for you. In the state of Colorado, it's decriminalized and we can grow our own. It's, you know, looked down upon, but you're not going to be thrown in jail for it or even get, you know, fined, et cetera. It's illegal to buy mushrooms from somebody else, so it has to be donated to you. Maybe you take them out to dinner or something as a as a donation back to them. So I'd say mushrooms are the easiest, safest way to go because you pretty much know what you're getting in terms of the spores and it's a little bit difficult to grow, so some people may want to find a friend who's passionate about it and just help support their hobby. For the other molecules, particularly MDMA, you absolutely want to test it for things like fentanyl, and there's a company called TantSafe, which has these little dipstick tests that you can do, and I think it's critical to sacrifice a capsule or two and make sure that it's not contaminated with fentanyl and other substances. Same can go for checking LSD, et cetera. But most of the plant medicines are going to be safe. It's going to be the man-made ones that you've really got to double check and spend the money. You can order these on Amazon and then test them.
It's called TAMP, T-A-M-P, safe, TAMP space, like tamper.
Dance, like dancing.
Oh, dance safe.
Dance Safe. Yeah,
Okay.
because it was the rave
The dance
community
rave communities.
that
Okay,
would want to make
dance.
sure that their MDMA was safe, so they called it Dance Safe. And yeah, you can buy various levels of different test strips there, and they're effective. And I strongly recommend that. I think it's always a good idea for people to have spray Narcan around, just on the very off chance that they test something, and then it ends up there's one sour fentanyl in there that you got, unfortunately. So a lot of times you can get those free from psychedelic medicine meetings, or you can buy them in pharmacies now. I think it's good for everybody to carry one just in case they see somebody randomly on the ground who looks like they've had an overdose, and you can squirt it in their nose and save their life, right? So it should be a fairly ubiquitous compound that people have in their glove box, in my opinion.
Good advice.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit too about using, like, really getting the most out of a psychedelic journey. Now, I know I am familiar with Rick Strassman's work on the DMT called the spirit molecule, and DMT is one of the substances you talk about in your book. And I thought what was interesting about his work was it was really set up to be like a scientific study to the best degree possible that he could do, having it in a controlled setting, really controlling the dosage, and then following his subjects over a period of time across a varying number of factors. And if I recall correctly, one of the things he found was that I think it's like the integration, like people didn't seem to have, this is just what he found. I'm not saying this is true across the board, but he seemed to say that the integration of the experience, like people would have really profound insights while they were on the substance and it was really deep, and maybe there'd be, some stuff a few days after, but in terms of kind of like long-term impact, he didn't feel like the findings really supported that, like that it was sort of fleeting, like it wasn't maybe what we were hoping, at least for DMT, that DMT would be. And I'm kind of curious if you have an opinion on that in your own work, or maybe it was just that particular substance that he was studying. But what do you find in terms of really like lifelong impact or long-term impact on emotional, psychological, mental health, et cetera, from using these substances?
Yeah, that's great. I've met Rick up in Boulder, really nice guy, and I'm really happy he did the research he did with IV DMT down in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I think when you're working with DMT, you go so far into the stars that you're not really able to put it together, per se, in terms of integrating what happened there.
Got it.
I've done plenty of DMT journeys myself, and it's more of a element of, oh my God, I went to this beautiful space of oneness, but I really couldn't put together what all happened there because it was such a short trip, and I was so far out that I didn't have one foot on planet Earth. Whereas with many of the other molecules like LSD, you can be out in nature hiking around, same with mushrooms, and you're able to converse and have a conversation and do tantric with your lover, etc. DMT, you're off planet unless you're doing a low dose that's smoked
Got
in
it.
a vaporizer or something. There is ongoing research by USANA Institute looking at DMT for the treatment of depression and anxiety, and I think it's showing efficacy there. So I think it's got some therapeutic capacity to really treat those conditions. We'll just have to wait and see what happens. But from a integrative standpoint, I think DMT can be more of a challenge unless you're talking about ayahuasca, where you've got a longer journey for 4 hours and you're able to process what happened and the insights, after and the next day and all. But yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, I think DMT is being looked at from an injectable, nasal, all different forms of applications, and I'm hopeful in the next 5 or 10 years we'll be able to figure out a little bit more where it may play a role in the mental health field.
Well, it seems as well that this idea of the set, like the mindset that one has when they're going in to use the substance, is really critical in terms of what you're going to get out of it. Because you can easily take a psychedelic substance like, say, LSD or mushrooms, go to a concert, party, have a great psychedelic time, but it's not necessarily earth-shattering or spiritually transformative. On the other hand, you could take that very same substance, have a totally different setting and a different mindset around it. What are my intentions for this? Why am I using this? What's the purpose? How am I in relationship with the substance such that I have a totally different experience? So what would you say about that?
Yeah, I agree. And I think that holding it in a setting of mindfulness will take you so much further in terms of awakening and then being present and connecting to your lover in that deeper, more intimate way. I'm not against people having fun at a rave with MDMA or being with a group of people tripping on LSD, because I think sometimes, they may be like, wow, this is amazing, and I would then like to try it in a set and setting which is more mindful. So it might be an opportunity to then allow them to try it in the other settings. But I would say, yeah, I would definitely recommend the more mindful space for it. And then you're able to manage some of the intensities of the medicine when you're in a mindful, controlled state rather than being in a rave where people are bumping into you, the music's loud, and it can be overstimulating. And some people may love that, but the more introverted people who are more sensitive may flip out to it. So I think you have to kind of measure where that individual is again in their own personal set going into that rave or going into that party thinking about psychedelics.
What are some common challenges that couples might encounter if they are beginning to venture into this realm in their relationship and bringing psychedelics into their sexuality?
I think it can be good challenges. So for example, MDMA I found makes me much more vocal in terms of sharing any issues I might have with my lover. I'm more authentic. I'm less filtered, which, sometimes being less filtered can be a bad thing. But when you're on MDMA, you kind of come from a heart-centered space of being able to share something in a loving way, like I love that you do this, Susan, but this one thing drives me a little crazy, but in that context of you both being in a heart-centered way, you're able to kind of appreciate and then discuss it in an open, loving way that you would not be able to even bring up without the medicine. So I think it's, if I were going to find one thing for couples therapy that would actually be freaking effective, it would be MDMA sessions, basically, is what I have to say. Yeah.
I
And
love it.
then the other cool thing is my partner will often say she'll be very demanding, which I kind of like in a way, in a kinky way, right? She'll be like, sit on my, yoni or go down on me or whatever, And so there's like no ability, there's no shyness there. She tells me what she wants, and instead of this whole filter of, oh, well, he might think this or that if I ask him to do this, and then I'll be the same way. So we're able to have our needs met, and it almost feels kind of selfish because we're so demanding. But she'll demand just as much as I will, and then towards the end of it, we're like, wow, that was just freaking amazing. Can we just do that in a normal state? And we've gotten to where we can do that more now, but yeah, it's taken, several MDMA sessions to kind of take that filter off and then to be willing to be more creative in our sexual play and ask for what we want and be willing to receive, right? Sometimes I feel bad about receiving. I want to be giving much more. That's a weakness of mine. I want to give more. But I would say on the MDMA in particular, but also on LSD and others, I'm much more balanced in terms of giving, receiving, and being more playful.
So it really can bring in, I mean, because that's such a thing couples struggle with. As a sex therapist, that's what I see a ton of, like, I'm afraid to ask what I want, what if performance and what I'm not doing it right, and what if I'm being selfish, and yada yada yada. So it sounds like some of these journeys with the psychedelic assistance can really help resolve that inhibition, and which is great. I think it's huge to be able to get past that and have that willingness to give and receive sexually uninhibited, in an uninhibited way.
Yeah. And then, yeah, it just opens you up for deeper levels of of intimacy and then deeper levels of trust, I feel, because here I am being more vulnerable, letting her go into my butt or whatever, you know, and then she may want the same thing. And then I'm like, wow, I never would have done that otherwise. And so you open the door to more exploration and more fun and more trust and deeper levels. So it's great.
I love it. Well, we're getting kind of near the end of our time together. Is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know about psychedelic sacred sexuality, psychedelics in general, anything we've talked about today that you think would be helpful that we haven't touched on?
I think the main thing is just be aware of the laws and regulations and everything that I've talked about today is simply informational. I'm just not giving you recommendations, just information, right? Be safe, create that safe set and setting, get the experiential in with a trusted facilitator before you work with your lover, and learn to flow to beautiful spaces of love and bliss and oneness, because to me, that's where we all need to be going. And if we can all go there and feel that realm of energy, I think we'll shift the planetary energy in a way that it'd be more healing, more conscious, more respectful, and will lead us to greater sustainability. I just feel very deeply for the planet. I'm a very deep nature connected kind of dude, and I feel that if we continue to exploit the planet and exploit each other and in different ways, that we're not going to be here much longer. And this is an opportunity for you to see the other side of the coin and to travel into these spaces of love and to hopefully radiate that to others around you locally and globally.
Yeah. And where am I? I know that there are resources out there for finding people who are trained to hold space, right? There nowadays, there's certifications for various mental health folks and maybe even other types of people who aren't necessarily mental health to be these space holders, to be the guides to help people kind of get the most out of a psychedelic journey. Do you have any resources you could share with our listeners that you know of where people could find these types of practitioners?
Yeah. If the listeners go to psychedelicsacredsexuality.com and they go to the resource page, they'll see all sorts of articles and facilitators and nonprofits, et cetera. I think your best place to go is a local psychedelic society meeting. And I don't know exactly how many there are now, but pretty much every state has one, except for maybe the Deep South. And if you can go to those, you can even go to them virtually. Many of them will stream them. You can find local facilitators there, and you can meet them in a setting of, you know, a formal or kind of informal meeting of seeing if they feel like the right type of people that you would trust and that they have the experience to take you on a mushroom journey. That would be my recommendation. MAPS has some recommendations. That's the Multidisciplinary Association of Psychedelic Studies, Rick Doblin's group. There's, retreat centers that are trusted that you can go to if you want to do ayahuasca or other plant medicines. But all of that's on the website, and I'll be adding to that continually. And then if people have feedback that they want to make on the book, which, by the way, is available on Amazon, they can email me at Astraeus, I think it's just astraeus.amori@gmail.com, although you'll find the link on the website.
Okay.
And then just say, hey, I have this question or this feedback. I'd love that, because I do plan on doing updated editions of the book in terms of new things I learn from my own explorations as well as other people's feedback. So I hugely appreciate that.
Yeah. Or your next book could be on the edge of orgasm or something, like, right? Like, you're just floating on the edge of orgasm for like hours.
Yeah, the never ending orgasm. I could call it that.
orgasmic edge.
Yeah. I mean, one of the cool things in the book is I have several erotic passages that describe what we feel while we're on these particular molecules. So I think that's something that once you read these states that you can go to, you'll be able to resonate with, oh, maybe I want to work with psilocybin, or maybe I want to consider doing LSD, yeah, et cetera. But I wanted the reader to get a feel for the actual experience, not just, yeah, the scientific spiritual elements.
Yeah, and I'll just, yeah, I mean, I'll be testimonial for that, having read a decent part of the book. It's really an easy, a fun read. It's really enjoyable because you're telling these stories of you and your lover. So you really get a taste for like what these journeys might be like. I mean, they're going to be different for everybody, but you get a little bit of a taste. And then I do really like how you have some of the more practical stuff, like the metabolism, how this molecule works, dosing, ideas for dosing, what a low dose versus high dose is. I like that. I think it's a really great resource that's easy to read. It's not like super academic where you're going to get bored, or it's definitely like a really fun journey going through the book. So I'll just say that for my listeners. And I do encourage everybody listening to go check out a copy of the book. You can get on Amazon. Here's the cover. Again, I'm going to show it here. Psychedelic Sacred Sexuality by Astraeus Amori, available on Amazon. And then also at your website, Astraeus, which is psychedelicsacredsexuality.com. Any other ways that our listeners can connect with you that you'd like to share?
I think, through the website is best. I do have a Facebook page too, and it's got a fair amount of content on there. And I'll be posting this podcast and any other fun talks that I do up on the website too. So if you want to listen to it again, you can just go to the website and stream it and get the pearls out of it.
Yes, awesome. Well, thank you so much for being my guest today on the Sex Talk Cafe.
Thanks, Susan. It was so much fun. And let's do it again if we want to focus in on, you know, a particular molecule or topic.
That'd
you
be
name
great.
It.
Okay, I'm in.
Awesome.
Thank you for joining me today for the Sex Talk Cafe. Please be sure to show your support by subscribing to this podcast and sharing it with your friends. To keep in the loop on future events and happenings, and to grab your copy of our free ebook, The Pleasure Keys, 7 Secrets to Feminine Sexual Fulfillment, visit us online at pathwaytopleasure.com.